Cernick City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting is now in session. It's February 10th, 2026. It is 5 p.m. We are meeting in virtual via Teams, Microsoft Teams, and in person at the Kiawanda Community Center, Faye Jensen Room in Pacific City, Oregon. The rules of conduct: all cell phones, pagers, and other mobile communication devices must be turned off or silenced for the duration of the meeting. All persons in attendance will remain quiet during the course of the meeting unless called upon to comment. Refrain from any behavior that disturbs, disrupts, or otherwise impedes the orderly conduct of the meeting, to include shouting, booing, hissing, etc. Refrain from creating, provoking, or participating in any type of disturbance involving unwelcome physical contact, and be asked to leave the room to conduct side discussions, and also to refrain from any speech of a political nature. So normally we would call the roll call, but since we have a couple of guests today, would you please introduce yourself for the record?
David Sears, I'm president of the South Tacoma County Emergency Volunteer Corps.
I'm Gary Billingsley. I'm a board member of the South Tacoma County Emergency Volunteer Corps.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome.
We'll call the roll now. Director Doyle.
Here.
Director Shoemaker.
Here.
I am Director Donahue, the chair. Director Anderson and Director Strotska are absent. We do have a quorum. The minutes from January 13th, 2026 business meeting. Are there any corrections or deletions or additions that are needed? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to accept the minutes.
I make a motion that we accept the minutes for the Pacific City Joint Water Sanitary Authority Board meeting held January 13th, 2026.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to accept the minutes of January 13th, 2026. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Item number five, our financial report. Item A, accounts payable for January 15th and January 31st, 2026. Are there any questions about those accounts payable?
I have questions, of course. The disc filter repair, is that something that happens like once a month, once a quarter?
It was a fluke. It was a fluke. It broke. We fixed it. Hopefully, it never happens again.
Okay. And then there was the wastewater treatment plant, W.H. Riley and Company pumps $9,312.
What date was that on?
I'm going to say check 27460, if that helps you.
Was that William H. Riley?
What those pumps were for?
It says pumps and parts.
It might be something related to filters. I know Jason's the one that ordered them.
Is it on the wastewater side?
It says wastewater treatment plant pumps and parts.
So $9,000?
It's for disc filters because it came out of
check
the
27460.
Yeah,
okay.
I can't find it. What page?
That was page 4 of 5.
So
that also was part of our disc filter.
Part here. Of the disc filter.
You sure bin. That's 4 or 5?
Mine says 4 or 5.
And it's $9,000.
$9,000.
Oh, there it is. Found it.
Okay, so it's not a normal occurrence. That's
definitely not.
Okay. Global Network, new computers, 7248. That's something that we were counting on? Or?
It is something that we budgeted for.
Okay.
Three of our computers are more than 6 years old.
The desktops or laptops?
Desktops.
Desktops.
And the programming is no longer supported.
Okay. Cascade Waterworks check 27443. What is a PRV?
Pressure regulating valve.
Okay.
That's that was to repair a pressure regulating valve. I'm trying to remember the exact location, but they had to replace the whole valve because it. What's that?
Is it the one by lower loop?
I think it was. Yeah, but we have several of these stations. They create the different pressure zones based on where people are within our service boundary and what elevation they live at.
Is that something that you keep in stock or you order as they fail?
They usually don't fail. This one, the iron body of the valve had actually rusted all the way through to the point that it was starting to squirt water out.
Whoa.
And that was a water leak we'd actually discovered in the PRV vault last month. And it wasn't the big contributor, but the whole valve had to be replaced. And some of these valves have been there a long time. We usually have the valves rebuilt and refurbished over time as just, you know, preventative maintenance. But this, we had to replace the whole valve because the actual valve body had rusted and pitted all the way through.
Do you order the valve and then put it in, or do you have to have that installed?
We have to have people with some expertise install those because there's a lot of bells and whistles on these valves. And they look like a clay valve, if you know what I mean. You know, there's all kinds of pressure sensing tubes and everything going into them. And it takes somebody with some skill to install those and calibrate those.
Okay. Trojan Tech, the lamps. Didn't we talk about lamps last month, too? Expensive lamps, do you remember?
Well, those were.
I wasn't here at the last meeting.
Okay.
I believe we were talking about IR lamps or.
The UV lamps. Yeah. I can't remember if we talked about
We talked about it last month, and I apologize. Yeah. I didn't look back to see if I could find it. But
about every 3 or 4 years, we replace all the lamps all at once, and it was time to do that. At least on the one bank. We've actually got two banks, so we have double that many lamps. But we just replaced the 30 lamps on one bank.
And those are guaranteed for a certain amount of time?
They're guaranteed for 12,000 hours. And our UV system does not run continually. It only runs during the decant cycle for our SBRs. So it takes about 4 years to go through 12,000 hours of runtime on those lamps. So it's about an every 4 year expense, but it's a rather large expense.
You don't see them fail, you see them run to end of life.
Yeah, sometimes they'll fail prematurely, but usually they reach their warranty or their recommended usage limit before they fail.
That's a 36 month warranty.
That's yes.
And we did cover this last month.
And we did cover it last month, okay.
I got the notes here.
Yeah, that's what we talked about lamps, and there was an expense last month. The last but not least, the special districts insurance, maybe for my benefit and Max's benefit, we have to pay insurance every year, and we pay
annually. Yes,
annually.
Yeah, this is property casualty insurance.
Yes.
Cybersecurity, I believe it covers bond for anybody in finances, so you guys are covered on that one too.
Okay, it looks like this month it was $125,000 and last month it was $24,000.
That might have been for a different kind of insurance.
Yeah,
you noticed right under special districts.
The $24,000, that's our medical insurance.
Yeah.
Okay.
The last two, in this column, the last two special districts, it says annual property casualty. Or excuse me, employer medical.
Okay. I should have looked further than that. And I've asked you this before about board attendance to district special district meetings, I heard that we get a discount. We talked about that, and I cannot remember what you might have said.
We can at times. There are certain meetings they have throughout the year. If you sign up early enough, there is... incentives.
Sometimes there's a training attached to it.
There's some incentive to signing up earlier rather than later. Yes.
1%, 2%, I think it's 1% or 2%.
Oh, that one. Those requirements have not come out yet. They're due by November. I don't know what they're going to be for this year. That is the best practices for our insurance. We did receive our 5% from last year, which 5% of 100,000 isn't bad.
Yeah, I would think so. So you are going to comment, do you typically go to those meetings?
I do occasionally. You went to the last one, didn't you?
No, I did not.
SDAO meeting?
No.
I go once in a while.
Okay. Well,
they're very interesting. I like to see how what legislation is coming up that affects us. Because there's usually, because it's special districts, they have everything from fire departments, school departments, water, sewer, and everything. So there's a lot of interesting topics here.
In general, it looked like December's expenses and January's expenses kind of rung the bell for heavy expense months. Yeah. I know last month we talked about a vehicle purchase and whatnot. In this month, or January, was the insurance.
Yep.
So that rang the bell pretty good couple months.
Yeah. Do you have any comments?
No, I understood everything that's going on so far.
Okay. Well, then, if there are no more comments, I'd entertain a motion to accept our accounts payable for January 15th and 31st.
I'll make a motion that we accept the financial report accounts payable for January 15th and January 31st.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second to accept accounts payable for January 15th and January 31st of this year. If there are no further comments, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any those who oppose signify by saying nay. Motion carried. Item B under our financial report, our general ledger. Does anybody have any comments about our general ledger for 2025-26? How are we according to budget at this time?
I would really love if we had some more SDCs.
Yeah. Well, remind me.
And what does that...
What's our annual...
We asked for 10.
I know.
That's what we budget.
Month. June? Do we have till June?
We have till June 30th.
June 30th.
And SDC stands for?
System Development Charges.
Thank you. All right. If no other comments, we'll move on to the manager's report, item 6. John?
Thank you, Tom. A couple of things of note. Wanted to circle back to our unaccounted for water the way I do. Still holding steady at about 20%, equivalent of about 1 million gallons a month. We've been taking advantage of the good weather by doing a lot of leak detection. It's acoustic equipment, and if it's raining hard, it's not the ideal time to do leak detection, so winter's not usually the best time to do it. But with the good weather we've had, we've done quite a bit of leak detection, but as of yet, we have yet to find any undiscovered leaks. We know we've got some out there. We must have some out there. There's always the chance that some of our production meters, primarily our individual well meters, could be not accurate, not as accurate as they should be. The meters are fairly old. We really should think about replacing them, but we didn't run the wells much, and we still wound up with about the same percentage. So,
query, didn't we replace one of those well meters here a year ago or so?
I don't think we did. We did install a new meter at Horn Creek. But we haven't done anything with the wells. They're, you know, they're the old water specialties, propeller meters, mechanical meters. They do occasionally need some maintenance, some calibration, and as old as these are, they probably need to be replaced. But as I say, although we're trying to find causes of our unaccounted for, our current unaccounted for water numbers, and you know, we always think about, you know, well, how accurate is our production meters and so forth. We can rule out the well meters because we're not on the wells much at all this last month, and we still wound up at about the same percentage.
So we have
unaccounted
six
for
wells. We have 6 meters, one for each well.
We do, but we have the dune wells also have a master meter.
Okay. Approximately how much do the individual meters cost for each well?
Well, if we were to replace them kind of with the same type of meter, we could replace them for less than $5,000 apiece. But, you know, they are fairly good-sized lines, and of course, the bigger the diameter of the water meter, the more expensive it is. But these meters are not like a magnetic meter, you know, where you can spend $20,000 to gain a small percentage of increased accuracy. But these meters, I'm quite sure we could get for about $5,000 apiece.
So that would be 30. Perhaps we ought to budget for that,
yeah,
seeing how that's coming up.
Yeah, I've already talked to Leonard about it. That's something that we're going to try to budget for in this next fiscal year.
Will we need a new master meter also?
I don't think so. The master meter isn't something that we really use or rely on that much. It is a good cross-check to the three dune meters. And occasionally we do those checks. We don't see a significant discrepancy, but I would probably focus more on the individual well meters for now.
And just for the people that might be listening or listen to the audio later, normal loss is figured around 15%.
Well, that's the industry standard. What the industry what the industry allows, I mean, of course you'd like zero, but the industry standard has always hovered around 15%. AWWA is going to tighten that up a bit, down to 10% as the goal or the target of every public water system. Every public water system has unaccounted for water or lost water through various leaks. You know, small system like us, we've got over 20 miles of water line, if you count the mains and the services. Imagine somewhere the size of Portland, you know, and that's a lot of pipe that could potentially leak. And so it's, all water systems have this leakage. We want to get our percentage down. But again, if this was the summertime and we still had the same amount of water, unaccounted for water, the increase of production, that, you know, the higher amount of water that we produce in the summer alone would change the math and get us closer to 15%. That's why I started kind of keeping track of volume, yeah, as well, because the volume's not going to throw you any mathematical tricks. So the volume is really the heart of it, and it's the number we should pay the most attention to as we're trying to figure out where this water is going or where these leaks are.
Just out of curiosity, since how you are affiliated with the fire department, Director Gold, have we been doing a lot of training out there, or have there been some fires?
No, typically the training is all done in HEVO. Unless we have a burn to learn or something like that, when we're out in other parts of our own water district. But we've talked a little bit about trying to keep track of when we fill a tanker, which could be 750 to 3,000 gallons, and typically that's done in somebody else's water district.
Okay, thank you. John?
Yeah, just a couple more things to touch on. The North Broughton Water Main Improvement Project, we are still working to nail down with a high level of detail the scope of work for the project. That's got to be done before drawings and bid documents and specs and cost estimates can be put together. But, you know, it takes a bit of an effort because you have to pretty much capture everything the job will entail, including parts, labor, everything else. And to some extent, you almost have to at least get a little bit of pre-engineering done before you can even really be able to determine that. But, you know, it's a matter of, you know, how many services need to be transferred, how many fire hydrants do we want to add to our system, where exactly do we think they'll go, how many valves need to be relocated or replaced. You know, there's a lot of factors, and we should have the scope of work pretty precisely nailed down within the next 4 to 5 weeks. But it's no small effort. I mean, it's easy to say we want to replace this water pipe, but when you actually pull in all the nuances and all the considerations with that to determine the scope of work that a contractor can put together an accurate bid for, it takes a little bit of time. But
now, you mentioned a preliminary engineering. Are you calling the scope of work the preliminary engineering before it goes to the engineer?
No, I'm saying that the engineers have to sit down and kind of figure out, you know, if we're going to relocate a valve cluster, where are we going to locate it?
Okay. You know, that all needs to be written down and specified.
Yeah.
It's okay. Now we'll figure out what it'll cost and what it'll entail.
Yeah, you know, so it takes a fair amount of thought from not only us, the water purveyor, but also the engineer to put together a detailed scope of work that includes every facet of the project. And but you have to do that, because if you don't do that, then the contractors that bid on the project, you know, their bid may not be as accurate as it otherwise could be. So
I got the opportunity to forget a lot of stuff or miss things.
Yeah.
Without that pre-engineering.
Are you still hopeful for 2026 on this project, or is it going to be 2027?
Well, I'm hopeful for 2026, but if there's any likelihood that we're going to miss our window to repave the roads that we're going to have a lot of trench cuts going through, and we're talking about, you know, one of the main roads into town, if there's any risk of that, we may put it off till spring so that we can get the job done. We know we'll be able to get the asphalt work done. I want to make sure this job goes smooth. Want to make sure that our customers don't have any reason to be unhappy about it. And if we can't pave that road before winter, and we're looking at 4 to 5 months at least with a road that has all kinds of backfilled trench cuts going over it, I think we'll have some of our customers that live in the area or they have a business in that area that maybe aren't going to be real thrilled about that prospect. So, you know, whatever we do, I want to make sure that we do it with in a manner and with timing that provides the least detrimental impact to our residents, to our businesses, to our visitors, all of these things. And I think that if we base our decisions about the timeline for this job with that in mind, I think we're going to be better off for for delaying the project to ensure that we can start it and complete it in a timely manner.
And I think we talked a little bit about potentially a public meeting or something to introduce that project, and once numbers are nailed down and time frame and all that, so that the public has an opportunity to come in and learn or
paper
article or whatever.
Well, I imagine I'll do it a lot like Rupel. I'll start by sending out a letter, and in the letter I'll give it an introduction to what we're doing, what the impacts might be, and in the letter we'll identify a date and a location to have a meeting like that.
Okay.
But we're probably still 6 months out from something like that, but that's the plan. I did want to mention too that in addition to the scope of work that I've already talked to the board about, we have decided to add Hillcrest Road to the scope of work on the project. Hillcrest Road is comes off of 3rd and Ferry Street, the intersection of 3rd and Ferry, and it's a little loop that goes up to a little knoll that overlooks Sporty's. And the reason we added that to the scope of work is currently the houses up on that little knoll are fed from a rather strange 2-inch line that comes off of Broughton, goes up the hill, and then circles back down to Broughton. If we didn't do Hillcrest now and run a new water main up from the bottom of the hill off of 3rd Street or off of Ferry Street, we would have to retap that 2-inch circular weird little water line to the 12-inch water main that we're going to be connecting all the other homes on Broughton to. And we want to get rid of that line. We want to abandon that line. We don't want to have to retap it into the new water line. And the best way to avoid that is, since we're already going to be at within a block, let's just extend a new water line up to the top of Hillcrest, which is like I say, it's once you're up at the top at the dead end, you're pretty much right above Sporty's or right above that little RV parking area.
Yep.
So we think this makes the most sense, and then we can abandon that 2-inch line.
So currently you just have one line running on, that would be the south side of Sporty, and you want to run it on the south side toward the north, the top of that hill?
Yeah, instead of feeding that area from a 2-inch line that goes up that hill and then circles around that road and comes back down the hill and creates
a loop.
So it
has 2 feeds now?
Well, it's got a loop feed that feeds that area. We want to abandon that 2-inch line as well as the AC line it's currently connected to. And we want to run a water line up from the bottom in the street like a regular water line would normally be run.
Would that decrease the pressure?
Well, no.
Now there's basically a loop.
Well, the other advantage to replacing, putting a new water line up there is it'll be a 6-inch. The 2-inch is not large enough to supply fire flows to that little section of town. If we come up from the bottom with a new pipe and abandon that 2-inch loop, now we'll have a 6-inch water line that will be sized appropriately that we can have a fire hydrant up there and provide fire flows to that part of town.
Great idea.
So,
thank you.
But I'll keep people posted more about this. Just a quick note about the generator enclosure project. The last tough shed was installed at the 300K reservoir on January 12th. The doors for all three sites have been fabricated and delivered. Also made some progress with our permit issues with the county. They have assigned addresses to our dune wall sites. And we have two of the three electrical permits we need now. We're still waiting on the last one. Part of it's my fault with a bit of a delay getting them the site plans for the spit wells. But it does take a little bit of time to get that processed. But interestingly enough, the Dune Well locations now have a Cape Kiwanda address, Cape Kiwanda Drive address.
Interesting.
So, which surprised me a bit, but at least we now have addresses at these sites. If we ever need to obtain a construction permit, electrical permit, plumbing permit, or whatever for the county to do work at these sites, now we won't have any trouble with the permit because now they have a dedicated street address that we can reference on the permit application.
You'd think they'd do Sunset.
Yeah. Well, Sunset's the spill walls. The dune walls are the ones behind the treatment plant. On the BLM property.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, they're a ways removed from Cape Kiwanda Drive, but now all three sites have an individual Cape Kiwanda address.
Cool.
So I'm pretty sure the ones at the spill walls will probably, they'll probably follow through the same way and assign those a Sunset Drive address is probably what they'll do. So that's really all I've got for the board regarding the manager's report.
Thank you, Dan. John. Item 7, unfinished business, testing of privately owned backflow assemblies. What did you and Director Doyle come up with?
Well, we met a few weeks ago and gave the situation some serious thought between us. I believe that Director Doyle and myself have come to the same conclusion or a consensus about how to proceed, and we plan on putting together a small, not a big proposal, but we plan on putting together a proposal for the board to consider. In that proposal, I'd like to list our options. I'd like to talk about the pros and cons of each option. The proposal will end with our recommendations and conclusions to the rest of the board, and as well as some discussion about a phased approach for doing this. Perhaps doing 20% of these a year with the goal of having 100% of them done in 5 years. But we'd like to defer very much discussion about that until our March board meeting. I know that Kathy and Luann wanted to be a part of those discussions. And, you know, mainly I just wanted to let the board know at this meeting that I think me and Dan are in agreement on a proposed approach to solving this problem. And we'd like to pitch it to the board at the March meeting.
Okay. Item B, under unfinished business, authority manager annual review form. Director Anderson and I worked on this, as was reported last month. And this month in your packets is a starting point for the new annual review form. Basically, what Director Anderson and I came up with is to make everything a little more consistent and a little more clear. There were a couple of suggestions that were made by our new HR consultant through special districts, and I believe we incorporated one and discarded another. But to give you a basic example, as you probably perused, we had a tendency throughout that form, as we improved it every couple of years, of mentioning either the board of directors, the BOD, the board, or directors. So for consistency, any one of those phrases or words were all changed to board of directors. So that made it consistent throughout the entire document. Others were grammatical changes. And there were a few brand new sentences in there that made the document a little easier to comprehend. In the basic instructions, we separated what the authority manager was supposed to do with the document and identified the board of directors' instructions, kept them separate. It was a little confusing. So this is going to be a starting point. So I wanted to make sure that you folks all got it. So the next workshop should only take us about an hour, hour and a half, just to go through this and yay or nay it, or come up with other suggestions, which I'm sure the rest of the board will come up with. And we'll change it right there. I'll print up a final copy after our workshop, and we can vote on it in April. So that's where we are with that. But I wanted to make because the workshop is next Tuesday, the 17th, where we're sitting now, I wanted to make sure you had a good week or so to peruse it and make your own notes. So anyway, that's where we're at with that.
Well, thanks for your guys' effort on that. I'm sure it's time-consuming.
Actually, it wasn't too bad. It took us about just a couple hours.
Oh, wow.
Director Anderson's a smart lady, and I am a long way from stupid. We just put some basic ideas and common sense together, and it wasn't that difficult, but it was a little tedious at times. But I learned something along the way, and that's what life's all about anyway. So that's what we had for the annual review form.
Tom, I had a question related to that. I'm perfectly happy to participate, but I'm not sure if you want me to participate.
Actually, we kind of briefly chatted about that, but yeah, we would like you to participate.
Okay.
I think especially since, you know, you're on a sunset period with the district.
Yeah, and it feels like the sun's still pretty high in the sky.
Well, regardless, I think it would be helpful to get your perspective interwoven in where we can make sure that anybody that we're looking to hire.
All right. No, I appreciate that. I'd love to be there. I'll be there to
Okay, we're going to hold up for just
a second. Pause for a second so I can change the batteries.
Okay, it is 5:39, and we are now reconvened after a repair of our recorder. And we are on new business, item 8. So we have the South Tillamook County Emergency Volunteer Corps Radio Tower Proposal. Boy, I got it all in one sentence. We have Mr. Sears with us this evening, and he has a proposal for us. Mr. Sears.
Well, thank you. I can just sit here, okay? Yep. You all right? To start with, I want to thank you for the opportunity to come to speak to you. First of all, I want to thank you for that. We appreciate that. So the South Tillamook County Emergency Volunteer Corps is a 501(c). We're all volunteers. And we work on emergency preparedness through South Tillamook County. When we say South Tillamook County, that's kind of like the fire district. That's how we determine the area we work in. We're very active in Nesquim, Pacific City, and Terre Haute. Basically, that's where we have the volunteers. You know, we would like to be more involved in Hebel, Plugin Back, but we just don't have a volunteer base there to do much. I came before you before when we were talking about the tsunami shed up there in Pine Avenue by your water tank. And so again, we're very thankful for that. We're very proud that we now have 6 of those sheds in South Tillamook County. And we call them the tsunami shed. And it can be a little bit misleading because they're there for any emergency purpose. If you had a catastrophic storm, people are isolated. Any of the stores we have, we can break them open any time and use them if they're needed. And when we kind of talk about communities, we say, if you need it, get it. John has a combination. There's a real estate boxes on it. The keys inside that. And by all means, it's on your property. Anytime you want to go into it, by all means, if you'd like to meet with me and the explanation once in a while, of course, I'd be happy to meet with you for that. But today we're here, we're going to talk. We're going to talk about this little guy right here. And I thought it was kind of ironic. There you go. I should just bring this. What is this? Jarvis Radio. And Gary brought his too. So we're on the same page there. So this is it. GRMS Radio. It is a line of sight radio.
What kind of radio is it called?
General Mobile Radio Service.
Is it VHF or FM? Or?
It's VHF.
And these are pretty unique. Now, Gary lives in South Beach. I live in Turtle Mar. And we can talk about this. Line of sight. We can have a normal conversation between each other.
But very similar to what we use on our dories, VHF.
CB radios you're talking about, right?
No, not CB. We have VHF also.
All right.
Could be that. There's FCC's defined a bunch of MERS and family radio service. It's a better alternative to CB. Basically.
Yes, I agree. It carries further.
Okay. And so the point about it is, like maybe you're talking about the stories, line of sight. So from Terre del Mar, I can talk to you here because we got the cable in the way. The cable prevent that from communicating down here. And so we basically use these RIS within our communities. We call them radio nets every month. We get on the radios and we practice using them, you know, the Terre del Mar and then radio nets go in and Pacific City. And they work real well in the communities. We can talk amongst ourselves. Terre del Mar, we use them a lot in the wintertime. Not so much this year, we have our outages. We turn on radios, we can communicate with it. It's a good safety thing. Because Terre del Mar, the power goes out, there's no communications. Our cell phones don't work without us hooked up to the computer. So they're really effective for that, for safety-wise. So that's really good. In our communities, we communicate in our communities a little bit, that's good. We can communicate in Dan's neighborhood, up Pacific City Heights, with these radios. But the problem with is that line of sight issue. And the thing is that we cannot communicate into the Stucker Valley. We would like to be able to communicate with the Hebel Fire Station. If we had a catastrophic event, Hebel Fire Station would be the EOC. You know, that would be where the command and control is. That's where we need to get information to. They need to get information back to us. At this point, we have no way of communicating with them. The K-8 score, the grade school that K-8 was on it, we're setting that up as a resiliency center. Working with Tillamook County, we're setting up, we have a container there. We have a lot more stores there. And so ideally, if we had, storm being ideal, but if we had this situation, our sheds are very limited for very limited people. We'd need to move those people to a bigger facility, which would be the K-8 school. You know, the retrofit they did on the school makes them more resilient to earthquakes. They have their own water system, their own sewer system, they have propane tanks. So it's really an ideal situation for a larger group of people to be sheltering in place. At this point, we cannot communicate with them. Our radios will not communicate with the K-8 school or the Hebel Fire Station. Now, Gary can explain what a repeater is and how it works, but we have looked at the site we're calling the 600K tank, is that right, site? That location, we did some preliminary tests, you know, kind of like my kids, can you hear me now, can you hear me now? And from that location, we can talk to the Hebel Fire Station, we can talk to the K-8 school. From Mescalin, Pacific City, we can talk to that location. Yes.
Do you have to be at that area present
no.
to do it? Or is that, it'll just continue on into a sub-base?
Yeah, so what a repeater does, is just a radio that's set up, it's listening on one frequency and it's going to just broadcast like a parrot what it hears from the other. And the radios, when you set them up to use repeater usage, it will transmit at the right frequency and receive at the right frequency. So it will seem as if I'm talking directly to Dave, when in fact I'm going over the hill through that repeater. GMRS is really common for service, community emergency response team. That's pretty much a standardized radio for certain all over the U.S. And a lot of them, most of them, I would say, are using GMRS. And the ones in the area around here where we have communications issues, they set up repeaters. So the Halen Bay Emergency Volunteer Corps, they've got two repeaters set up in that area. North Lincoln County, their certs have a repeater set up there. And so that's how they're solving that kind of problem, getting communications out past the topography that's the challenge for us here. And we've been, as an organization, looking really at this repeater problem for at least three or four years, trying to decide where's the best location, how do we contact anybody who's got property in a certain spot. And it's been really challenging because there's so much private property on these hilltops, and nobody's really willing to, I mean, by the examples of the sheds, to really help volunteer maybe just a little parcel to set up something like that. So in the studies that we recently did, we had three sites that seemed to be the best alternative to being able to get our communications from along the coast into the Stucco Valley. Two of those, I'm really not sure that we'd be able to get anything going with those. One of them is federal property, it's probably probably part of the suicide forest. I'm not sure the federal government would, I mean, possibly, but it just seems like a really tough task. So we targeted Root Mountain, specifically the PC Water and Sewer property, as an ideal location to say, hey, this is what we're proposing, this is what we'd like to ask. Is there a partnership that we can do with this?
I have a question. I noticed in the pictures you provided us,
I did give them a copy of your
proposal. Okay. And on the antenna structure, I think see is a triangle, metal triangle structure that holds what looks like the brain box and solar panels. But what intrigued me is you have two antennas. Was that
Yeah, that's just an example to show that there are remote locations that can handle these kinds of repeaters. They don't have to have power. I mean, that was one of our initial criteria, is when we needed also somebody's property that had power to it. But as we researched it further, we realized, well, there are guys that are setting up solar power and battery generator repeaters. And so it might be actually feasible to do it in a remote location. It's kind of another reason why Bruton Mountain area is kind of rose more up to the top.
I think there's one on Mount Hebo, is a weather station up there on top of Mount Hebo. It measures snow and everything.
Yeah, that actually has a diesel backup generator. So that's for the county. Now, that was one of the ones that we also approached about putting our repeater on Mount Hebo. And the county heavily discouraged it. They've already said, look, we've already had there are too many antennas up there as it is, and other organizations that have got their radios and repeaters up there. And so the communications director from Tulsa County basically said, I don't think we can really sponsor it.
So this repeater is basically going to give you access to the Evo fire station.
Correct.
And from there east to Portland or Salem or wherever you need through other communication devices, I'm assuming.
How far will that branch off that repeater for communication?
So on the big, there is a plan for Tillamook County, communication by Tillamook County. Our part is to get into the Evo fire station and the cave we talked about. The next level is a ham radios. Now ham radios have repeaters on top of Mount Evo. And that would be the next step. The next step would be ham radios to get to Tillamook, and then farther out from there. We really need to talk to Tillamook. That is our go-to place. Working with Randy Thorpe, the emergency manager for Tillamook County,
Because then that's going to tie us into OEM, and then that's where we get the resources through them. So again, this idea is to get us into the K-8 and get us into the heist to the Kibo Fire Station. As far as going beyond that, it's ham radios. Gary's a ham operator, I'm a ham operator. We have several Starlinks available to also try to supplement that, to get that word out.
So you would relay from your G, whatever you call it, to the ham operator who has exactly. one, and he can go ahead and take it out to
exactly.
tell him up.
Exactly. And then we talk with net controllers. A net controller is the person that runs that community. So I run Terra Mar. I'm a net controller for Terra Mar. I have a ham radio license. And so I can communicate directly to Tillman, providing that the relay on top of my Hilo is still functional. And then Gary can do the same thing. But so this right here, the importance of this is we communicate within ourselves, our resources inside. We can communicate with the Hilo fire station.
Will it help anything that's already, does it help at all with Nesco and talking to Pacific City or?
Absolutely. You talk about it, everything's about that communication, right? In the emergency and catastrophic events, all about communications, being able to talk, to get information out, receive information in. So this is just a vital link and something we have within our communities to talk within our communities.
So the repeater on Rudin Mountain
right.
would enhance communication not only to K-8 and Evo, but amongst the other communities as well? Or?
Well, it could be a far relayed information. We got this information flowing back and forth through the South County by our GMRS radio. Then that also could be enabling maybe one person in Esquim ham radio to Tillamook, or maybe me or somebody in Beaver. It just makes us more connected. This is more options. But what's really, I think, is important for me personally is I want to have, not control, but I know I have a access to the key points. I mean, I want to talk to EVO, EOC. I want to be talking to K-8. You know, are we set up? Can you receive more people?
Just off the top of my head, this is one of the higher points in South Tillamook County, other than maybe Cascade Head. This might not be a bad place to also put some kind of a ham repeater on that same antenna, that antenna structure.
Well, it's possible. As far as power requirements, we might have to upscale to a second battery, which would mean a second enclosure on the box.
Or maybe a generator that would start with power or auto start.
Well, let's talk about power. What's powering this? Are you having to?
A lithium iron phosphate battery.
Strictly solar. The district doesn't have anything to do with providing this tower.
No, I'm just curious.
It'll be operating off the battery. The solar is really just to recharge it. Even then, depending on in the winter, when we're talking about overcast weather, really long nights, high usage of the repeater might drain the battery faster. Of course, then it can be recharged, in which case you have to wait, before you be able to use it. I'm trying to get a battery size, so that it can continue to operate for a high level of transmission. Receiving, it really uses a lot of low power when it's just listening. It's when the repeater is actually having to rebroadcast those transmissions, so it's using a lot of power.
Are you looking mostly at the 25-watt devices?
The repeater that we've chosen, the field repeater, would be a 25-watt, but that's set at 15 volts. If we use a battery, we're only going to be supplying at 13 volts, so derating it, we're talking about, it's really only about transmitting anywhere from 15 to 20 watts, which should be sufficient. The extra power really helps in signal attenuation, like getting through walls or through foliage. Distance really has to do with line of sight, which is really elevation. The higher we can get the thing up there, the better we are at being able, even at a low power, to being able to talk to somebody.
John, in the winter months, as you were stating, would it be possible that we could allow access to them to change a battery if you...
Oh, yes. And, you know, in general, I want to say that, you know, if this is something the board would consider and approve, I can say the impact to the authority in our operations would be negligible, especially once the system is installed. You know, if they want to check their battery, they will give me a call. I'll have somebody unlock the gate for him. He can go up there, do his maintenance, and you know, we can certainly trust Dave or Gary to lock up on their way out, but we could be there for that too. Certainly, this, you know, we're talking about, you guys might want to visit the site a few times a year, probably. That's not a workload for us. So, and it won't have any other impact on our operations. You know, I will say that I'm not big about having somebody install an antenna to our tank itself. When people contact me about this, that's usually what they're thinking because they assume the tank is higher than the topography. When you guys got up there, you saw that the tank is actually built in a bowl, and the surrounding topography is actually higher than the roof of the tank, which is why you guys picked what I think is the highest piece of property, which is the southeast corner of the property up there, to put a standalone
solar exposure to keep the power going. Even then, I think some of those trees might shade the panel most of the year, but it still may not be that.
Who owns that property adjacent?
He's a developer.
Drew Long.
Yeah. He owns a house on Simmons. He owns the PC Trailer Park.
But I think there's some other private property owners on the back side of the property that I'm not entirely sure about.
Looking at the photographs, I'm just ballparking here. I'm looking at the one, that section right there looks to me be about 50 or 60 feet from the our tank. And
you talking about the temporary one they had up there testing?
No, I'm looking at this one here. That shows the tank and its proximity to the where you're going to put it or you want to put it. Would that, if that in high winds being, you know, Broughton Mountain, and it does get a breezy around here occasionally, would that have the possibility of hitting our tank? And would it, would this be a guide antenna assembly?
I don't think there's enough room to go with a guide tower. That's why I picked a freestanding tower system that requires a pretty substantial concrete base, which to my mind was the biggest intrusion into their property there. Was this, basically we're talking about a huge concrete, a concrete block of 3 feet by 3 feet by 4 feet deep. So the excavation of concrete pool would be the most intrusive aspect of us working up there to get that base poured. What that does is that provides a substantial foundation for a freestanding antenna to meet the wind loads that this manufacturer is showing for their product. So you notice they'll have they have wind loading, and the square footage is based on how big of an antenna you put up there. Using a calculator that I've had online, with the antenna that we're proposing, we're well under the 9 square foot wind resistance rating. So, below the 5 square foot. So, according to this, it's 110 mile an hour resistance for wind loading.
Yeah, just about everything on the coast is rated minimum of 110 wind burst miles an hour usually.
But to answer your question, sir, 30 feet from that location, I don't know that we actually measured it with the tape. I guess the answer is it's a possibility.
Okay.
What, when you did your testing, assuming you tested this, had somebody at K-8 and at HEBO. On a scale of 1 to 100, where did it score for results? 100 being excellent. And
yeah, we put down excellent. It was. I was actually at the, Gary was up on the hill up there at the tank. I went to the HEBO fire station right outside their lighter propane tank outside, and it was an excellent clear communication, you know, to send and receive both ways. Then we went to the high school. We checked it there again. Excellent. Then we went to the K-8 school. We checked it there. So all of the three key locations, it was good.
Well, I think that in general, speaking for myself, the board in general, I think, thinks this is a good idea. But I'm going to suggest that we table this vote right now because we're missing two directors. And I think that they'll like the idea also. And so they have the same documentation that you've provided us today. So I'd like to table this for a final vote for next month when both of our other two directors are present. That make sense to you?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess the biggest thing that I hear out of all this is the battery backup and possible hindrance to the solar that gets to the panel because of foliage on trees. And I just want to make sure that if we go through this, it's going to be able to, you know, function properly when the weather's not so good, which it sounds like there's limitations in battery backup.
And there you have the option of contacting us and just have an extra battery fully charged and be a quick switch out. Well, it looked like it wouldn't be too complicated.
Who's funding this?
When we get approved, if your board approves it, then we go to grants.
Okay.
I think we'll probably do that, but I can't speak for the entire board. I like the idea. Emergency preparedness is something that it's not if, it's when. Mm-hmm. And so I think these are all, you know, really smart things to do.
Well, and, you know, just my two cents worth is, you know, I think understanding to the level I do, just because I've done a lot of reading about it and stuff. You know, the big one's coming, and when it hits, we're going to be isolated from the rest of the world for probably a couple of few weeks. We're going to have roads out, landslides, trees down. We're going to be without power for who knows how long. I think that these types of preparations will save lives one day, and I truly believe that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, the storage sheds, the emergency sheds, you know, just look at Pacific City and realize how many people are going to be homeless. And it's going to be a lot of people.
Well, thank you for coming, gentlemen. I just want a point of order here. I'd like to point out that Jeff Pippinger is online. I apologize. I didn't see when he came aboard, but Jeb is listening. So let's move on to our next item on new business.
Tom, before you do, I do want to mention one last thing in full disclosure. Coincidentally, I was contacted yesterday by an agency representing Tillamook County who is interested in the 600K site for their emergency fire and police communications.
Oh, it's part of that new grant? Is that it?
Could be, but, you know, I didn't get a lot of information. You know, I thought the timing was interesting. I just wanted to say that I haven't gotten really any detailed information or proposal. This was just a phone call saying, you know, Tillamook County is interested in the 600K site as well.
Interesting. Sounds like a way to partner and save some money for everybody.
Well, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, and you know, I think all these efforts are important. You know, if we've got limited room and limited capacity, I guess my feeling is first come, first serve. But on the other hand, the thought did occur to me, you know, their emergency services would complement these grassroots emergency services greatly in the event of an emergency or a natural disaster. And so I think you guys are, you know, kind of cut from the same cloth when it comes to this. And I think it's all important. Is there any possibility of, you know, and of course, you know, the board hasn't even approved one repeater, let alone another, and this would be a radio frequency.
Do you know the person that contacted you is named Ruben DeClue?
No.
Mark?
It was actually Mandan. He had a strong access. He worked for an organization that apparently helps locate prospective communication sites.
Contractor. Yeah.
You know, and he didn't have a lot of the details that the people, the emergency coordinators and stuff at the county could have probably filled me in on. But nonetheless, the thought did occur to me, is this a way to kill two birds with one stone and perhaps even have some cost sharing? I have no idea if the intent, or if the tower would have to be upsized. It would have to have their equipment on it in addition to yours.
That's what I was going to add. That brought to mind a question, John, I wanted to ask you. You know the site better than I do. If the county's interested in doing something like this, they're going to want to have AC power there, and they'll probably have some kind of... Do we have power at the site, don't we?
No.
That's all gravity.
It's all gravity. We pump from the 300K up to it, but it flows out via gravity. I will say that we have a level sensor up there, but it is also run solar powered.
Okay, so if they would want to have power up there, that'd be on them. And there would probably need to be some kind of a little shed like we've just putting on our pump houses. Is there room there for a small little pump house, or like we would, you know, for electrical and an emergency generator, that kind of thing?
I will say that space is at a premium. We'd almost have to occupy the same footprint, if at all possible. But as I say, I've just gotten a single call. It's hard for me to gauge how truly interested they are, how focused on this one location they are. But I do know it is also for radio communications. I'm sure a different frequency and different than GMRS.
I think they're intending on going to a digital trunking system with multiple antennas as opposed to relying on a single analog antenna that they use on EVA.
Okay. Well, and they also assumed that our tank was the highest, and they initially asked about, you know, installing something on top of the tank. I did explain to them that, well, that's probably, if you want to get the highest possible, there's higher pieces of land up there, but...
Not far from your house.
You know, but, you know, in full disclosure, I just wanted to mention that contact was made.
Well, thank you, yeah. I've talked to him about it, you know, Ruben DeFleur. I've talked to him and said, hey, you know, we're communication South County. It's a very complicated process. So we never got a clear answer. So we, you know, put like a repeater on these new towers going in. I don't know. But, you know, thanks for the update on that. You know, that's something, it's a conversation. I mean, we're absolutely flexible. You know, our ambition, our goal, you know, South County residents and staff. And, if we can accomplish that by working with whoever, of course we would, you know. So
let me ask this question. You said first come, first serve. If the board meets and votes on this and approves it,
then they have to still have to come up with money.
They have to come up with money, but it doesn't totally eliminate another interested party with potentially partnering,
no,
or them, you guys partnering with somebody that has more horsepower.
No.
Radio frequency, whatever,
right,
whatever you want to call it.
No, and it, you know, it was just my thought, you know, it could be 2 years from now before they get serious about even doing something, you know what I mean? So, you know, I think, you know, it's just food for thought, I guess, and you know, yeah, when I say that, you know, you know, they could have called 3 months from now, and you could already have your antenna on there. And then what would we say? You know, but I don't want to say preference. I don't want to say anything. It's just my personal feeling is that I'd hate to make one deserving party leave them in limbo for an exceptionally long time, wondering about what else might happen. I guess is all I'm saying. So,
noted.
Hey, well, I want to thank you so much for your time listening to us.
Well, thank you for coming. It was a very interesting conversation.
Thank you. Do you mind if we...
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. All right.
Well, but we'll circle back. You guys are welcome to sit in at our meeting next month if they want to.
Sure. Sure.
You know, but it sounds like the board will probably be in a position to perhaps... come to some conclusion when we have the full, all the board members present.
Okay,
all right.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, thank you for stopping by. Okay, let's move on to item 8, number B, grant funding for watershed protection plan. This looks like a pretty interesting thing, John.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, let me just read what I wrote here just to kind of summarize what we'd like to do and what we know. Probably be good for, you know, just to give somebody a clear idea of what this proposal is who might listen into a recording or read our minute, our meeting minutes later. So I was contacted by one of our consultants that told me about a grant funding opportunity for source water protection activities. This is as much as $70,000 is available per grant, and our consultant who's worked with us on water rights and stream gauging stations and everything else knows that we don't have a source water protection plan, which to be honest, most of the large water purveyors already have, and the smaller water purveyors are starting to obtain as well. We have a source water assessment that was done some years back. The purpose of the source water assessment was to identify potential hazards to our water sources, whether there are groundwater sources or whether there are surface water sources. And the watershed protection plan is kind of the, okay, we've identified the potential sources of contamination or harm to our source water in the assessment. The protection plan provides mitigation strategies to mitigate those potential sources of contamination. This is... something that most water purveyors pay for out of pocket. They hire a consultant, they do this, but there's a pretty substantial grant opportunity, and my research indicates that we would almost certainly qualify and would be awarded the grant. The grant would be used largely to pay our contract, our consultant, to write the plan for us. And, you know, it's a good-sized plan. A fair amount of thought and analysis goes into it. To write a plan like this will probably take longer than a year. You know, I thought this sounded like a pretty good idea. And I did... we did reach out to DEQ because we've got two different source water, types of source water. We have groundwater for our wells, and we have surface water for Horn Creek and Horn Creek's watershed. Our question to DEQ was, well, we really need two source water protection plans. What was DEQ's thoughts about being able to get a grant large enough to pay for both? And DEQ responded by saying, well, they recommend we do both, but we consolidate both in a single source water protection plan that covers both the watershed, both the surface water, Horn Creek, and our aquifers and our well sites. So DEQ recommends that we go for covering both types of water sources in this plan. It means that instead of costing $35,000, we may take advantage of the whole 70 and may get awarded the whole 70 to write a more comprehensive plan. So, you know, my worry was, well, if we shoot too high and try to bite off too much, will it put any grant money in jeopardy? If we wanted to really just do one, but we shot too high, would it possibly hurt our case for applying for these grant funds? And DEQ says no; they think it's a great idea. So these funds is offered by the through the Drinking Water Source Protection Fund, which is a government subsidized fund for water systems to...
Is that a state government or a federal government?
Well, it's state government that we will be working with for the funding. Where they get their dollars could come from the feds.
Gotcha.
But it is a state program, and the fund is managed by the state. But these dollars would be primarily used to pay a consultant to write these plans for us. Our best guess is that our only out-of-pocket expense for this would be approximately $2,000 for the grant application. The same consultant that would do the study would write the grant and apply for the grant for us. And
all for $2,000?
Mm-hmm. Well, they'll write the grant and submit the grant on our behalf for about $2,000.
Their money out of $70,000.
Yeah.
I don't get for the grant writing. They'll just take that out of $70,000.
The same company that did our...
Well, actually, we'll have to pay for this out of pocket in advance.
You spend $2,000 and you're competing with other agencies for that $70,000.
No. There's a lot more money than $70,000 available. It's $70,000 maximum per grant.
I mean, there's 500 water... Plus, water companies in Oregon.
Yeah, it's 70,000.
So a lot of money.
70,000 per grant, so they've got a lot more than 70,000 in their fund.
Okay, so excuse my thick-headedness. If we spend $2,000 to write this grant, are we assured of getting the grant?
Our consultant, who's does this all the time, is pretty confident it's a slam dunk.
Okay.
And this is a reputable company. This is the same company we did. They did the measuring at Horn Creek for us, GSI.
Yeah, they set up our stream gauging station. They helped us secure our water rights extensions.
Taught our people how to take those measurements.
Okay, so you get the grant. Now, that $70,000, out of that money comes a protection plan fee. Somebody has to develop a protection plan. And then if the protection plan works, or on paper it works, then it has to be boots on the ground, shovels in hand, whatever's required to do the protection.
Well, to implement the plan will be up to the authority. To write the plan will be done by our consultants, and not a lot of boots on the ground other than just analysis and measurements and things like that. There's no construction, no...
Just putting the plan together.
Okay,
yeah.
So you mentioned that the industry as a whole is moving towards doing protection plans, correct?
Yeah. It's not required of yet, but it's highly recommended. And if you have a plan, it does open the doors to other opportunities later for additional funding, if additional funding is needed for the any of the mitigation steps.
Can you generalize on what we're protecting against for Horn Creek? Is it what runoff? Agricultural runoff, or?
It's agricultural runoff, it's erosion, it's any lumber activities, timber activities, if there's any mining or any mining claims in the watershed, that's another potential source of contamination. And you know, one thing to point out is we don't own the watershed. The watershed is owned by Stimson Lumber and probably a handful of other public and private stakeholders. But that's the case with every watershed. To my knowledge, and I know because I work there, Astoria is the only municipality in the state of Oregon that completely owns their own watershed.
Wow.
So anybody that has a watershed protection plan has to partner with other folks. The good news is that this consultant recently wrote a watershed protection plan for Rockaway Beach, and that Stimson Lumber owns that watershed too. The nice thing about Stimson Lumber is they are happy to partner with water suppliers to protect that resource. And we won't be telling Stimson Lumber what they can and can't do, but it's a collaborative, it's a partnership, and it's very, very common for not only private property but public other public property owners to partner with municipalities and with water purveyors for this type of effort.
Okay, so we currently lease the land at Horn Creek for the treatment plant, correct?
Yes. Where the treatment plant sits proper? Yes.
Okay. Yes. The watershed is Stimson.
A lot further upstream. And but it all has an impact on our water source, our primary water source. And I think that this, as I say, will not only reap benefits to us as who has the water rights, or I think we're the only one that does have water rights on Horn Creek. This will help to protect our water source. This also sends a strong message to people that we are good stewards of this resource and we want to protect it. And here's the proof. You know, we've done this source water assessments. We've created these source water protection plans. So, to me, there really is no downside. I mean, you know, the thought or the concept of a couple of thousand dollars in seed money to write the grant could yield up to $70,000 in funding to develop these plans, and it just seems, not to mention just the PR, the perception, the message that we send to our customers, to our community, to the stakeholders that, you know, we are a responsible water purveyor, and here's an example of what we're doing to preserve our water source. And I think that looks good for the authority.
And to protect our water source.
Yes, I think that looks good for the authority. Timber companies and folks like that are very used to partnering with water systems. In fact, this consultant, I believe they've done one for Rockaway Beach. I believe they've done one for Knee Tarts. I believe they've done one for Lincoln City, just in our area alone. And they've helped these smaller communities like us to develop a quality protection plan it's the right thing to do.
I notice here that we have a time crunch. Now, normally, the application window closes March 12th,
yep,
according to your statement here. And normally, I would like to have all directors work on this statement. However, because of the time crunch, I think it'd be appropriate, since we have a quorum, that we make a motion and a second to go ahead with this right now and make this an action item because of the time crunch. Knowing both other directors and as you do, I think they would agree that this is an important thing to do, and we do have a quorum and it needs to get done this meeting because they'll be back before we have another meeting.
Yeah, we'll miss the application window before we can act on it if we wait until
that's what I was afraid of. So, considering my comments, I would entertain a motion if you so desire.
Well, I'll make a motion that we pursue the grant writer and their services to apply for a grant for funding for watershed protection at Horn Creek and potentially our wells, ground wells.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second to contact GSI Water Solutions. What can I put that in there, your motion?
Yes, and $2,000.
Okay, to contract with GSI Water Solutions to write the grant application and to develop the water source protection plan, the grant being $2,000. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further?
Grant is $70,000. We're paying a grant writer
$2,000. We're not going there yet. We're paying them to write the grant for $2,000,
yes,
and the grant is for $70,000.
Yes.
Okay. We all understand each other.
Yes.
All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Okay. The last item is guest questions and comments, and our guests have left us. And I don't see any unmuted mics. So we'll go on to chair and director comments. Gentlemen, do you have anything to say about what's going on here lately? Hearing nothing, I will adjourn the meeting. It is 6:29 p.m. Thank you all.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, everybody.
Good meeting.
Thanks, Rochelle.
Whoops.
So, the table, she said, we'll just stack the chairs and push the tables over in this corner.
She said that was good enough.
Yeah.
It sounds like they probably got something going on tomorrow that they'll use them for.